Also ich glaube, wir haben den Film alle sehr lange nicht gesehen. Ich hatte in Erinnerung, dass... Bitte? Oh, sorry, English, yes.
Yes.
We haven't seen this film in a very long time. And I remembered it 5 minutes long. It was much longer.
It was much longer than we thought.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was more embarrassing than I thought.
Anyway. Well, okay. It was actually, you saw in the credits that we thanked Peter Tau. Peter Tau, whose name was spelled wrongly. Actually, he was video wart, so to say. He was like at the Freie Universität at the EFU. He was in charge of the video department, where we learned that was something that we had to do in the first semester, how to press a button at a video recorder and to make it start, and how to rewind and fast forward and stop. And but we could also use it to edit films. And so that's what we did. And we used a video camera and really filmed everything from the television on the floor of my Neukölln apartment where they were dancing. So it was so simple. And we were so not filmmakers.
and I dare say we still are. Not so. yes. But this Stravinsky tango has been played by a friend of mine. We forgot to mention him. I want to mention him, Christoph Kammertöns, because we thought, and we don't have to pay GEMA. Like, we didn't know what we were doing, but we were taking everything we had in order to make it possible. And maybe I should say something about the title, and you can help, because the title is actually from your field. Übung am Phantom, exercise on the Phantom. That was a course in the Medizinstudium.
I was studying medicine then, and I came to one of our meetings from a session in gynecology teaching, where we were actually taught how to find out whether the female vagina was functioning or not. You could say exercising with Nappa leather. Parts of the female body that reached from here to a little bit below the low knee, and that came in three colors: really pink for a young one, really red for an adult one, and really gray for an old one, the age we have now.
Yes. And it was not like on the Kirmes, on the fair. It was not woman without lower abdomen, but lower abdomen without woman. And calling this a phantom, something which sets into appearance, was sich in Erscheinung setzt, kind of like a specter, something which has also a little thing of comes with a little haunting with it, is kind of a very intricate form of presence. And something you can teach someone with, and you could yes, maybe I could just read a little citation by Avery Gordon from her book Ghostly Matters, which says, "Haunting raises specters," and I would think that there's something that there's an analogy also to the phantom. "And it alters the experience of being in time, the way we separate the past, the present, and the future. These specters or ghosts appear when the trouble they represent or symptomize is no longer being contained or repressed or blocked from you. So the phantom kind of requires attention, but haunting, unlike trauma, is distinctive for producing something to be done." And also what the phantom might share with other forms of embodiment and their interest conditions is a kind of invisibility plus ultra or mega visibility at the same time. And this is kind of, I think, I can't remember exactly how we also selected the footage we were putting together.
I
in
think
a rather
we
rough
did it
way.
By association mostly. We all had seen a lot, and when it came to the question where we had seen scenes where women went into the charcoal bowl, these were the scenes we remembered and which we picked then. And sometimes we were surprised we didn't see the bowl we expected. Sometimes we were surprised someone went into the bowl we didn't expect to go and didn't remember. I think that's how we did it.
I think it was also a different kind of film history writing in terms of because the Shakosha bow was used for so many things, like for horror, for women who faint, mainly, of course, this is the Shako connection, for a woman in an ecstasis. And so there were like so many different connotations coming with this movement that we wanted to kind of draw that line through film history that all has to do with this, construction of the female body doing the movement.
This might be kind of a good connection to the program we did on when techno turns to sound of poetry in this kind of here now rebuilt cinema. I think under the title Anatomic Alphabet. And would you like to start to talk about maybe the talks and also the movies we were showing inside this cinematographic arrangement?
What was this black thing in my face? Well, actually, I think, not sure if we've mentioned that the reason why we came together as a group was that we were studying at the Freie University, and we had a lot of screenings related to the university that took place at the Arsenal, and there were always introductions by many male teachers, and we were kind of very angry, actually, at the lack of feminist viewpoints and aspects, and it was a really very male-dominated film education that we had to go through. So we kind of boycotted that and stepped out and decided to do an how did you call those seminare? Projektutorium, exactly. We applied for one at the FU, we didn't get it, and then decided to move on in different contexts out of the university. And that's when we actually met techno or entered this exhibition context, and we were interested in then for that project in structural films, actually, because we have been discussing so much with the techno group concept art, of course, and post-structuralism, and we were interested in the question whether structural films, which really turn the focus on the materiality of the format of the cinema, of the cinematic apparatus, whether they are free of gendering identities. And of course, we had we knew they were not. This was, I think, a problem to start with that I had with us doing that, because we were showing structural films that we in this space that we had built, which was also, of course, had like a statement in terms in the context of the relationship between film and visual arts. We had a cinema program with films by, this one is by Michael Snow, of course, but also Bruce Conner, Hollis Frampton, like many classics and also less known structural films that I actually really liked a lot. Yet we showed them to prove that there are still constructing gender identities. And this is something that really haunted me later a lot. I think it was also related to this idea of showing films in an art space, that I felt something is wrong by showing films in order to prove that they are doing something wrong, because that means you don't really let them speak, you don't really let the audience experience them in a cinematic space. And so we did this with at least that's true for me. I had a very ambivalent relationship with it, but I loved it at the same time. And I was also, I really meant it also. I really felt that. So, but that was like a little struggle, I think, that we had to deal with. And I wrote a text many years later about that and was really still thinking about that. Was that okay? Was it not okay? And what we did there. We later, in the Berlin edition of the exhibition, we did a completely different program at the Cinema Arsenal. And that was kind of a relief. So we felt, okay, now we give the films the space they need. Although I'm not saying what we did was wrong. I think it was super important to do that and to really discuss it. And we were, for example, showing this film. So is this by Michael Snow? And in a speech that I just finally found back this morning, I gave. I was kind of, it was like a little argument with Michael Snow, because in this film he's asking, he's only using text, no images, but of course he makes the text, he turns the text into an image. And everything that we thought and that we've been discussing and all the questions that you could ask the film, he already answered. So he kind of, you know, he kind of played with that. And by making the words an image, it's actually like here, because we now it's okay, but in the very beginning, before you came in yesterday, some of the letters were coming down, so they have a physical physicality. And Michael Snow also played with that in the film. So in some moments, the words are a little going back and forth, so you have a depth in the film. And he also discusses the fact that, yes, I mean, you cannot hear a voice, so you cannot accuse anyone of being male or female, but he himself, of course, is a male filmmaker still, and who is in a way absent through the words. But then by being absent, even more present. And he even discusses this in the film. Like, if he were now here for a Q&A, he would say this and that and stuff like that. So it was very much about the physical presence, absence in written language. So there is a lot more to say about that. But it was kind of a, I mean, Michael Snow is I'm a big fan of his, and we've been friends forever. So I had the same ambivalent relationship to this, like love-hate relationship maybe with this structural film and those male filmmakers. We also, of course, showed some films by Betty Gordon, I think, and Sharon Sandusky by female filmmakers. But we had a very tense, I think, relationship to what we did at that time. Coming, of course, very much from this background of really being angry at the film history that we have been confronted with and the way film was taught at universities.
Yes, and also diving deep into theory and learning a lot and starting to compare kind of the state of the art with the state of the art of theory. And that of course made the connection also to books, to poems I loved more complex, more complicated, even though like the whole interference between theory and art and also art of language happened to be much more complicated and maybe also more lively, more alert. But still, and this might refer also to my participation I did, which was called Körper, comma, so body, comma. So it's just this, the idea between language, the informed body, and punctuation. So if I say Körper, comma, I'm kind of in the middle of informing the body as a body and also to dictating something like Körper, comma, Absatz, haben Sie das? Okay, it goes on. So what is kind of inscribed into the body? And this is the ANEP, which came out with the exhibition. And you can see it behind my back on the other side of the cinema, there is like the whole newspaper also available to read.
Mm-hmm. And for me, of course, it was also working with the image of the woman in medicine. So there was no phantom for the male parts to exercise how to investigate them, for example. And for me, it was also a question of how to learn to read a patient's mind and how to interpret it, because the pictures of pain, the pictures of suffering, they were all female, and the pictures of doctors were all male. And I simply didn't find myself in these pictures.
Would you like to go into your...
Should I go into that presentation?
Yes, I would.
I can. I made a little presentation. Being a medic, we always have PowerPoint presentations. So I thought I'd bring you one. The text I wrote, though, is in German. Should I say it in German or should I try to instantly translate? I try. Okay. Okay. When I was part of Übung am Phantom 28 years ago, I don't know if my microphone, I hear it in bits and pieces. Okay. I was studying philosophy as well as medicine. I now am heading a research laboratory at the University of Gießen where I investigate how stress affects female mice and humans and how this effect is seen in biological processes that differentiate between health and disease. And I also teach at the Charité and I have a little private practice here in Berlin for patients. When we met again, because Stephanie actually called us together, I was asked whether I lost my way that we shared in the beginning somewhere on this way into medicine. And I was reconsidering it and thought that on the contrary, I think I was carried by it into what I am now in medicine, a person that considers the spoken word as part of medicine, and a person that considers technology one option, how to do diagnostics. But to listen and to feel into what my patients tell me is a very crucial part that goes hand in hand, at least. And I'm also very happy to see that this kind of medicine is growing inside medicine and that females are growing inside medicine. So I think what I learned from the two of you and everybody else around it was in a way that talking to women, discussing with women gives you a different set of mind that allows you to be a little bit more free in the interactions with all the male colleagues and bosses and partners and children along the way. And this is what I'm now teaching also my next generation of students, male and female. So I started into medicine by trying to be as far away from the brain as possible. I had the uncertain feeling that there were a lot of doors open to me, but at the same time, I could not open them or it would be difficult to get them open. So I went. I started with philosophy, as I told you. I went into medicine, then into dermatology, as far away from the brain as possible. And then from the skin, I went into the nerves of the skin. And then somehow this ended up by studying the brain. And now I'm a very rare expert in how brain and skin interact and how this translates into inflammation that cannot be controlled through psychosocial stress. When my first or our first child was born, shortly after I did my dissertation, I did not want to know its sex. I wanted to follow the paradigm of Judith Butler, the doctor girls, the human into being. I didn't want to know it. And we had it in our arms for quite a while until we noticed that we could have a look and find out, was it a girl or was it a boy? Now that she's in puberty, I noticed that discourse is quite different for her and her generation. It's much earlier possible to discuss sex and where they find themselves in these constructs. I also see that she's bringing, or they are bringing, a lot with them through biology, but it doesn't determine who they are and what their opportunities are. I think they need a room with wide open doors, and this room needs a beat, which carries them, and this room grows with us. I still hear a song in my ear called Hey, kleines Rave-Mädchen, halt doch endlich mal still. Hey, little rave girl, why don't you stop moving? I wish that this beat is something she hears through her whole life and that she doesn't turn back, because there's poetry in that sound. When I look back, I noticed that since I finished medicine, the percentage of female professors has risen from 10% to about 26%. So that's an improvement, isn't it? But in leading positions, we are still just 5%. I was one of the Rahel Hirsch stipend receivers, whatever, of the Charité. We were about 45 women altogether. Most of us, 90%, habilitated. But they never calculated how many of us actually got into professorships. And from my own experience and from what I know from my colleagues that were stipends with me, I think it's the same 5% as ever. And that's quite interesting because Rahel Hirsch was the first female professor in medicine at the Charité in 2013. But she soon after that gave up because she could teach but not earn money with the title. So if I look into medicine now, just a second. It's a bit complicated because I'm translating on the spot. I remember a movie that Stefanie Schulte-Strathaus was digging out of the archives of the arsenal then and showed it to us. And I remember a scene from that movie with a student coming into a room full of smoking other students. And she was asking them how she could participate in the discussion. They said to her, she should move into the kitchen. She would find the people that she could discuss with there. What we discussed then at Techno and Phantom is for me now reaching medicine. But I still find when I look into the net, for example, for exemplary pictures like these to show in my lectures, I still find a very specific use of female and male faces in medical stories. So when it's about pain and stress, it's usually female faces that show it. And if it's about the science behind it, it's usually the male faces that are shown. In the first months of the pandemic, for example, the number of publications from female scientists dropped from 36 to 27% just within the first weeks. So I think when I look back now that a lot has changed, but that there is a lot of terrain that we should not lose again and that should still be increased. That's it.
So complicated.
Yes.
Thank you.
With mask and Kopfhörer and everything.
Yes. Should we not open to discussion? Or is it
exactly, yeah, because we have 15 more minutes. The idea was also maybe this can come up in the discussion, to speak a little bit about what we all individually took from that time and what, like Eva just beautifully showed us how she continued our discourse in her career. And I think in some ways, I think it was all very, this time, the Techno exhibition, but also Übung am Phantom was very, formative time for us in many, many ways. So we could talk a little bit about that, but maybe we just give you time for questions, or have you any idea what Übung am Phantom, did we give you any idea of what we were? What Übung am Phantom?
And what became
what it was
of
about,
us?
Or any questions? Philippa.
Come here.
Thank you so much. This was extremely, can you hear me? Extremely inspiring.
No, I don't hear
you. You can't hear me?
Okay.
Thank you so much. This is really inspiring. Also to understand how you more in a kind of a theory context decided to use the medium of film in order to use it as a feminist tool to exactly as Stephanie was saying, use it as how to produce a piece of that reflects the device itself of cinema as structuralist cinema makes, but addressing it as a feminist tool. And I think I wanted to hear a little bit more about how was the impact at that time when you presented this film, and how, that was very interesting. And was it in the context of this space that we are in, this kind of, so thank you.
Yes, we built exactly, not exactly, we built this space. So this is a remake, in a way, into the exhibition space at Schetale in Zurich. And this is where we showed the films. You see the projector outside. We had an analog projector there because films were analog, all of them. And so we showed a film program, but also a discussion, a program of speeches, discussions, lectures, and performances. And every time when nothing was taking place inside the room, which is, by the way, also now the case, during lunch break, you can hear it. You can hear this, just the sound of a projector in that room. This, I think, stopped after a while because the cassette player was stolen. So that was the frame. And this is also what I said earlier. It was also kind of this challenge of bringing film into a... Because I felt, as a film scholar at that time, that the interesting theory, actually gender theory, is taking place not in the film world. It's taking place in the art world, in philosophy, and others. So I always felt like torn between those worlds. And they were, of course, very separated, as they still are when it really comes to institutions. And so that's why we kind of replaced our film discourse, or why we moved it into the art space, but then also experienced those problems that I spoke about earlier, that what do you really do to film when you do that, when you take it out of its context into another context. And so we then in Berlin decided to show everything in the cinema, but then the films were different. Then we showed political films, feminist political films from the same historical time, from the early 70s, Helke Sander, Claudia von Alemann, Newsreel Collective, Lizzie Borden, so that was, I think the change, yeah.
But our little movie, almost like a movie, wasn't shown in the cinema. It was kind of on a TV set with headphones.
And it was running through all the time, so it was not, you could come and go watching it.
And I think there's one. When I spoke about the film, so is this. I ended the talk with a quote from the film by Michael Snow, which is, "There is something inside repetition." And I think that was like very much, as you could also see in our film, it was very much this idea of subversion through, Subversion durch Affirmation war, glaube ich, das wording, ne? To kind of subvert something through repeating it and then bring in some change. And so this is also something I think that we are now doing again in a way. We are trying to repeat something to kind of use the frame from the historical frame that we created 30 years ago to confront it with the present archive project that we are presenting in this framework, and see what happens. And also because, as you can see in the yesterday's program and also today's program, which is now a very international program, but we back then, we were not so international. We didn't even go to East Berlin. Everyone came from West Berlin, and so it was kind of a very local thing.
Some people came from Hamburg.
Really? Hamburg? Okay, some came from Hamburg.
We
kind of noticed
Saarbrücken,
that
actually.
When we, I don't want to repeat myself now because I said the same thing yesterday, but in Berlin we also then showed films, as I said, by Lizzie Borden and others, to bring in also issues around racism because we were more and more getting aware of the problem that we actually had by addressing the first feminist film seminar that took place in 1973, where we got all the films from that we then showed in Berlin, and we criticized them for only showing Western European and North American films and in the 70s, but we were actually not going far beyond that, this is why bringing this now back into this context creates something, at least for those who experienced techno back then, which is maybe only us and David and Stefan in the room. maybe there are some vibes coming from, or like showing those kind of frictions also to others.
Yeah, I was also very interested in two issues. One is this aspect that was mentioned about the idea that of this repeating idea also comes together with this spiral time idea that is not so much this Western idea of like the past, the present, the future that kind of like was intertwined in your discussion, but this idea of like revisiting differently, and seeing how things, in a way of like where you can compare and then you come back and you check again, how is today's situation concerning gender issues, for example, in the medium. So I think this idea of the spiral time with this repetition and also revisiting, for example, Michael Snow's piece that has this dimension of a structuralist piece of creating, questioning the device itself and what is doing it. And at the same time, you take this part, revisit Michael Snow, and materialize it differently in the space to create this chamber of reflection. I mean, all these things, I think they are very, like, it's part of actually all this idea of the archive that we are here, like this idea of that it's not about the past, it's about something that is in a continuum. And this revisiting is important to compare where we are. So this is more a comment. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. I think, that's very intriguing because we also, of course, witness the return of the repressed, and we have figures which are also half absent and half present, and all those kind of complex figures and objects and also are something which are also changing the way they are archived, if you can revisit them in a way and see what time as a method is doing to them.
Yeah, I think we actually had the discussion a lot while we were preparing for this, how circular our memories of the events then and were and now are, and how that transformed in each of our lives and each of our thinking. Yes, for me as a doctor, it's very important to understand the circular development of the frame of mind that the person that is sitting in front of me now but brings with him or her a past that is not factual, but is what it is now, and has to be treated now. And I think we all have these moments of where we understand what it does to us now and what we use it for now.
Sabit.
Yeah, thank you too. As someone who was at that time, as you already mentioned, participating in the project, I was right now really struck by the fact in how far or that and in how far the space of the cinema then also became already a space for the archive, already became a space we were debating at that time whether women should separate for a while in order to organize themselves, yeah? And that this kind of consciousness raising group moment, yeah, then turned out to be a kind of starting point of an interdisciplinary practice. When I look at the components of when techno turns the sound of poetry, the cinema, the poetry, the medicine, and the science, yeah, that was, of course, very relevant to our readings of Judith Butler and Donna Haraway, then you can see how those historical moments of late 1960s, early 1970s became then reconfigured in the way how you set up the whole space. And just the observation I just made, probably you have also an idea to that.
Thank you. No, actually, I heard that the room that we built inside Chetale stayed for quite some time. Like I think they use it further for many years for other things. So yeah. So that's true. So we did build a space, and I think this is exactly what you just described. We needed space, and we built it ourselves. But it was then also used for different things, like we are using it now today. And it's nice that you say that, bring this up, because this is something that I today think a lot about, how cinema and archive actually is related, and how much of the practice that is really engaging society is maybe more taking place now in archives than in the cinema space. So thank you very much for bringing that in. And there's one more, because we are kind of, I think, towards the end, but there's one more thing that geht gleich noch, nur noch ein Satz zu Ende, und dann, but you can ask your question. And before we, just one more thing I think that was really crucial. It's not just separating us for a little while, but also the notion of the us, the collective work. This is something that really stayed with me until today. I mean, between the Zurich and the Berlin edition of the exhibition, I got a job at the Arsenal, like a full-time position. And so I was not so present there anymore, but as some of you know, I'm still there at the Arsenal. Over the years, of course, a lot has changed, but what always really stayed with me was really the importance of collective work. And the networking, and also the process-based work, yeah, that you just enter a space of thinking, of thought, of, you know, trying things out, also fail sometimes and learn from that and from others. This kind of work was for me really formative. Like it really was the basis of everything, which is I think why, and I think there were, like, for all of us, things like that that really shaped our future. Basics for our work. But there's one last question, and
maybe while you come in front, I think we took that space with us actually, and it made it possible to find room in other spaces.
I wanted to ask you, because I'm a producer, I'm a film producer, and something I found very curious, something that you said, that like this feminist thought and collective work and so on is somehow more connected to the art world than the film world, I think, especially today. And I think there's kind of this, I wouldn't say an effort, maybe that's a too strong word, but to kind of keep it in this, small space. If we have to have it, then let's, keep it in this small space. And in this kind of film industry, yeah, we have more female directors, of course, and, you know, producers and whatnot. But this thought of meritocracy is pushed, which I think is a sort of a disguise for a chauvinist idea, that, again, that females are not good enough, let them be good enough if they want to be, in Cannes or whatever. So I wanted to ask you if you can reflect a little bit on that, of the sort of state in the film industry today, what you think about it.
So is your question whether it has changed or should change, or how we see it from the perspective?
Well, yeah, and if it's sort of, I don't know how to sort of how we can sort of push it to more mainstream, outside of this, let's say, hardcore art house context, where I think there's an effort to sort of keep it there. It's great that it's there, but I have a feeling that it's being kind of limited to this.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, and you're totally right, because of course we all know that there are still big problems also in the film industry, in terms there's no we are far away from gender equality, so there is still a lot to do, and there are like generations fighting for this, like Hochquote, and there are new networks coming up in every generation fighting for that. So there is still a lot to do. But honestly, it's also difficult for me to answer, because I'm not so interested in the film industry. I understand cinema really as a place for, let's say, social, political work. When I said, and that was true at that time, that what interested me in the questions, but also the theory that interested me, was more in the art world. Today, I would say I'm also not happy with the art world. I'm really much more interested in reconnecting cinema to the world. I wonder what cinema should be with our experiences of pandemics and wars. and how can we reconnect with people, with the world, and of course with history and ourselves. And these are, I find this more interesting, more important actually personally than the film industry. I know it's very privileged to say that, but you know, like at the Arsenal, we have a Kulturauftrag, I think we have to create space as we did it back then as Phantom, and do this again and again and create new spaces if the old spaces fall down or, you know, get lost.
I think that's a perfect final word.
Yes.
Thank you for your attention.
Thank you so much. The Phantom is back and will stay and always return when needed.